everybody. This is Rory Hoffman. My plan is to give you a little bit of a musical bio of myself. And I don't know if there's a review process for newbies or any such thing as that, but I'm going to email it to Larry and he will like it or lump it, as the case may be, which will determine whether or not you are listening to this. So, if you are listening to this, welcome. By the way, that song you heard as we were coming into the show was off my Fishin' CD called Nashville Nights. And that was recorded in 2003 here at Depot Music Productions. I was raised in a musical family. My dad did the country western thing in nightclubs and bars and all this kind of stuff. That was before I was born. And then he became a born-again Christian and started doing music. Well, not necessarily exclusively Christian music, but he got out of the nightclub scene and all this kind of stuff because he had children and family, and his convictions just didn't want to bring his family up in that kind of environment. So he started playing churches and fairs and festivals. I should mention I'm from South Dakota and grew up on a little ranch in North Dakota, just across the line from the South Dakota border, and cattle ranch. And so the gigs that we did were mostly North, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, etc., etc., Midwestern type venues. And I have two twin sisters, as opposed to having only one twin sister. I guess I just realized how I had said that, but everybody always says, yeah, I've got two twin sisters. But at least that's the way they say it in South Dakota anyway. Be that as it may, they were both born blind. They are 9 years and 9 months older than I am. And I also have a younger brother who is 3 years younger than I am. And he also was born blind. That's another interesting little story, which really doesn't pertain to the story in which I am attempting to relate to you. My sisters are keyboard players, piano players. I started becoming interested in music probably when I was about three. Actually, that's when I knew that that's when I was consciously getting interested in music. There's a story that my sisters say is true, that when I was about 6 months old, when I would hear a song on the radio, I would kind of coo in time with it. I'd be like, ha, 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 ha. I'd be creating little rhythmic phrases with what was on the radio. And so apparently I was genetically bred to be a musician. That being said, I got actually interested in playing music probably when I was like three, like I mentioned. It manifested itself first on percussion, and which worked out really well because Dad was having a hard time keeping percussion players, or drummers, really, in his band. He would use my sisters on keyboards and him on acoustic rhythm guitar, and then he would use other local, you know, teenagers or, you know, up-and-comer musicians from the thriving metropolis of Lemon, South Dakota, which was the nearest town to us, which has all of 1,300 people. So the pool was not large to draw from, but anyway, about the time I was 3 years old, I started banging on pie plates and ice cream buckets with spoons. Those metal or tin pie plates were my cymbals or my hi-hats or whatever I needed them for. And I would have a large ice cream pail for my, you know, bass drum or whatever drum, and then whatever other kind of bucket I could devise for a snare drum, and I had a nice little setup, and it worked out really well because Dad really liked dessert, and I really liked to bang on the containers from which the dessert came. Well, eventually the time came where Dad decided that he would take the risk and buy me a drum set, which he did. And by the time I was 5, I was the official drummer in Roland Hoffman and the Believers family band. And in case you were a bit incredulous as to that claim, the first selection I'm going to play for you is from our cross-country album that we did when I was 5 years old. And here I am drumming and actually singing. The song is aptly named I'm Little But I'm Loud. It was originally a Jimmy Dickens song, which fit me rather well. And so we recorded it on, we were at a little studio in Hebron, North Dakota. I know there's at least one blind cool techer from North Dakota, so he might know where that is. Hi, Jeremy, how's it going? And so here we go. This is I'm Little But I'm Loud with my dad on acoustic guitar, my sisters on keyboards and acoustic piano, and myself doing the lead vocals and drums. Just cute. Oh, I thought so. Well, so there you have it. That's how my musical professional career started, I guess you could say. I was the drummer in that band until I was probably about 12, at which point Reed became interested in playing drums. So I had already been learning how to play other things by that time, such as lead guitar, banjo, saxophone, harmonica, and a plethora of other things too, but those are the things I usually played on stage. So Reed started playing drums, and I started playing all these other things. I think the next selection I'm going to play is, this is from the last album that we ever did together as a family band. And I'm still playing drums, so you can kind of hear how I progressed as a drummer from the time when I was 5 to the time when I was 10, for whatever that's worth. But this is a song that my sister Kim wrote, and it's called Mommy's Boys. Isn't that special? Well, you'll actually hear Reed singing on this as well. And so this is from our Up With Families album, which we did in, I don't know, about 1987 or 88, I guess, maybe 1988. So here we go. Wasn't that just the most scintillating thing you ever heard? Well, I don't know about that, but it was interesting anyway, I hope. Not only was I interested in Christian music and country music growing up, I also got a lot of influence from my grandpa, who played harmonica and guitar, and he was really into the old-time polka music, waltz music, etc., etc. So I learned how to play a lot of that stuff too, and He would play his guitar and harmonica, and I would play accordion or banjo or, you know, whatever it was about that I could play. I used to like to make tapes for him of some of the songs that I'd learned, just because I was, like, recording and things of this nature. So, eventually, when I was about 14, maybe, no, I wasn't that old, 13, I would say between 12 and 13, we purchased some home recording equipment. We had one of them Tascam 8-track recorders that recorded, not on 8-track, but it had 8 tracks, and it recorded onto cassette. And I'd actually learned originally how to do it on a 4-track that we'd borrowed from a friend of ours, and we decided we kind of liked that. My computer's beeping at me, telling me my battery's going low, so I might have to plug it in which case you're going to get a nice annoying buzzing sound whenever I plug my laptop into juice while I'm trying to record using a microphone into electricity. Anyway, where was I? Oh, the recording equipment that we bought. So I decided to try to record some of this polka music and waltz music on a tape and learn how to use this equipment. So that was a fun project. Well, we didn't have much of a mixing board, I must say. All we had was a PV. Listen to that P-pop there. Let's try that again. A PV mixer, an XR700. It was a powered mixer, actually. It was the mixer we actually used on stage sometimes. And so it was a mono board, and it only had 7 channels. This little bit is kind of for the audio-oriented people here who might find this part interesting. Some of you probably will not. That being said, we had to couple 2 of the tracks together because it was an 8-track recorder but only a 7-track mixer. So, and then it wasn't a stereo mixer either. So in order to mix in stereo, it did have mains and monitors, a main send and a monitor send. So what I would do is I would come out of the right channel with the mains and come out of the left channel into the monitor. And so if I wanted something in the left speaker more than in the right, I would turn up the monitor send for that channel more than I would the main send, and vice versa. So that's how I recorded and mixed this album. And I recorded it onto just a 2-track Magnavox boombox thingy that every, you know, teenager has. This one had some line-in jacks on it, which was cool because most of those cheap boombox things you buy now don't have line-in. At least not that I've noticed. So I made the tape, and I showed it to my grandpa, and he really enjoyed it. He showed it to his brother, and it just kind of started making the rounds, and before you know it, a copy of it got sent to a radio station in Bismarck, North Dakota, where they had an old-time show on Sundays that would play old polka and waltz music and that kind of stuff. That show still exists to this very day, I might add. And anyway, it got played on that radio station a couple times, which attracted the interest of a music store, music seller shop in Dickinson, North Dakota, who contacted me to see if I would want to sell any of these cassettes in his shop. So what turned out to be just a little experiment, I wanted to learn how to use this equipment and make a fun little polka tape for my grandpa. I actually sold in the area of $1,000, probably a bit over $1,000 worth of cassettes from this little endeavor, which was kind of intriguing as a 13-year-old. I rather enjoyed having that happen. So I thought that would be a nice little segue to what I play next for you. This is called Saturday Night Waltz. And I'm playing every instrument on here, and I recorded it and mixed it all myself, as I had mentioned in the description above. And so here you go. Here's a little something totally different for you again. And now everybody grab your partner and 1, 2, 3 with me. We'll be right back. Well, there you have it. A little oompah music for your listening pleasure. I figured if there could be an accordion podcast up there, and if Christian could play that such and such a polka on his Tyros cast, then so could I. And so I did. Throughout high school, I really began to develop an intense interest in jazz, and my family all thought I had gone off the proverbial deep end, because none of them listened to jazz, nobody in my family, and so I developed that interest all on my own. And so it began in high school when I joined the high school jazz ensemble, such as it was, in a little community. There's not a lot of people who know how to do jazz and stuff, so it wasn't the greatest, but it was fun for me, and then that continued through college. I went to college in Aberdeen, South Dakota, at Northern State University as a piano major with a minor in saxophone. I would have taken guitar, but I play guitar in a rather uncommon way. I actually play the guitar with a guitar laying on my lap, and then I play overhanded. So I'm coming at the neck from on top of the strings on the fretboard, and I'm holding it left-handed too. But I'm playing a right-handed guitar. So have you got all that? It's upside down and backwards is basically what it is. But that happened because I was too little to hold the guitar the way you were supposed to hold it when I started learning how to play. And by the time I was old enough to hold it the way you were supposed to, I didn't want to totally reteach myself, and so I didn't. And at that time, when I was really young, the easiest way to get to the strings was over the top and press down on them rather than trying to squeeze the neck like it is done traditionally. And so I still play it that way to this day, and I don't get calluses that much because I'm not applying that much pressure. I'm more just pushing down on the strings with my right hand as though I were playing a piano, and then I'm either finger picking or using a plectrum in my left hand. So that's a little bit about how I play guitar. But anyway, the guitar instructor there at Northern didn't want to try to negotiate that. So I was a piano major with saxophone as a minor, and it was okay, but it wasn't really my love because it was a lot of classical training. My piano teacher was from the Czech Republic, and so she was a classical pianist hardcore, and here I came with 15 years of piano playing experience under my belt already without a stitch of lessons and without a stitch of classical training. And so I already had a lot of bad habits firmly in place due to that, and I could play jazz and she couldn't play jazz, and she could play classical and I couldn't play classical, and so we didn't really have a lot of points of common interest. But she did break a few of my most atrocious habits, and those that I liked I have retained. But so it was good for me in the fact that it got some rudiments down for me and a little bit of formal training. And the way I did that is I had learned a little bit how to read Braille music when I was in high school. People from the School for the Blind would come down and coach me with some daily living skills and with some Braille music things from time to time. They would, you know, travel and do that. But I have perfect pitch, so it was always much easier for me to learn it by listening to it, because if you're reading Braille music, you have to commit it to memory anyway, unless you have a very sensitive tip of your nose or tip of your tongue and can somehow keep various mucuses off the page. So since it has to be memorized anyway, it was a lot easier for me to just memorize it by listening to it. And so that's what I did in college, and they were okay with that. Whenever I would do my practice times, I would just listen to the piece and I would work it all out by ear. And then I would go to lessons and she would correct the few little things that I had wrong. And Mostly it wasn't so much notes that I had wrong, because I could hear all the harmonies and things like that very well. It was just fingerings, because I have my own way of playing, and it doesn't always necessarily conform to proper standards, or proper procedures of piano playing. And so that was a bit of a challenge, but we got through it all right. The one thing I really did like about college was my jazz instructor, and he was also my saxophone teacher. And I learned a lot about jazz saxophone from him, and we would even get together and do jams once in a while with him and I and the rest of the rhythm section from the jazz ensemble there at college. And I'm actually going to play you a couple jazz clips now. I'm actually going to play you one song that was with my saxophone instructor on saxophone, myself on piano, and the rest of the college rhythm section, our bass player and our drummer. And then the second thing I'm going to play is just a clip of a song from a jazz concert that the university jazz ensemble did. And I'm just going to play the little breakdown section where it was just me and a guest trumpet player that we had brought in. And I'm playing jazz guitar on that one. So I'll let you hear a little bit of my playing of some jazz music now. Thank you. I only went to 2 years of college because I was all set to transfer to University of North Texas to get a jazz studies emphasis on my music performance major. I had all the paperwork filled out and had my schedule figured out, what classes I was going to take, what dorm I was going to be in, all this kind of stuff. And I never went. First of all, I never did quite understand the value of a music performance major, because it's not a music ed major, so you can't teach with it. And as a music performance major, oh good, you get to perform. Well, I get to perform anyway. I'd been doing it since I was 5, and when the musician or singer becomes a star, they want to know if you're any good and if you can keep the attention of an audience. They don't want to know, do you have a degree in music performance? So, therefore, music performance never did really make a lot of sense to me, number one. And number two, I was beginning to launch my own career as a solo artist. And that came about because of a band I was in while I was in college, a band called Angel Hill. It was a Christian contemporary band, and I switched between keys and guitar, lead guitar in that band. And anyway, we learned about the Christian Artist Seminar in the Rockies in Estes Park, Colorado. And so we entered that as a band, and I also entered the piano competition and the instrumental competition. And we did this for 2 years. In the first year that we went, our band didn't score. We made it into the semifinals, but we didn't get into the finals. But I did take second in the piano competition, and this is an international competition. I was doing improv jazz arrangements of hymns. And that got me the second place trophy in that. And then the next year, we came back in as a band. We got second place. And then I took grand champion as the instrumentalist with my guitar this time. And so through that, it's kind of an industry meets the novice. The industry meets the amateur. That has more ring to it. And so they have workshops there and seminars and all this kind of stuff, and music industry people there, and they judge you and they listen to you and they critique you. And, well, through all that, I met somebody who wanted to help me produce my first CD in Nashville. Well, I didn't have budget to go to Nashville and record my first CD, but I met someone who did, and who believed in my music, and his name is Kim Ulmer, and I work with him to this day, and little did he know he was going to be called into the music business. He's an order buyer of livestock, he's a cattle buyer, and but anyway, he believed in my music and believed in my ministry, I guess, and wanted me to go to Nashville and record this album. Well, it was an instrumental album, and it was kind of based off what I had been doing in Estes Park. It was arrangements of classic Christian hymns done in everything from country to jazzy to bluesy styles. I'm playing both guitar and keys on this album, and that was recorded in 2001. And through that, my producer knew Gaithers. She thought she could get me on the Gaither tour, or she thought she could get me in with Word Records, because she also knew the guy who was then vice president of Word Records before Word Records was bought. Well, I'm not going to go into all that. Well, needless to say, I never did get on the Gaither tour, and I never did get on the Word Records. And so... but before I go any further, I think I'll play you something off the Blind Faith album, is what it's called. It was originally called Blind Faith in Him, So what a parody of words there. Well, play on words. Blind faith. Haha, good joke. In him, H-Y-M-N. So, but it subsequently got just called Blind Faith. I don't know exactly how or why that happened, but it did. So now it's just called Blind Faith. And I think I'll play you Amazing Grace off of this album. This is not really indicative of what the whole album is like, but it is fun because it's me and a harmonica player. I'm playing piano, and Terry McMillan from Nashville, great harmonica player, session guy from Nashville, is playing harmonica. It's just a fun little jam on Amazing Grace. We didn't bother fixing all the mistakes and super polished like with a lot of the songs on there. It wasn't really arranged. We had an arranger there for the album and all this kind of stuff, and he charted everything out. Well, this one wasn't done that way. This one was just done kind of spontaneously. I was sitting at the piano and he got out his harmonica and we started jamming, and it sounded kind of cool, and so we thought we would capture it. So we captured it a few times and took the best version of it and edited a few of the biggest boo-boos, but largely it's kind of an untouched, just jam version of Amazing Grace. And so, here we go. That was fun. Well, needless to say, because I already said it, that's another phrase I never understood. It was needless to say, and then you go ahead and say it. It's kind of like, not to mention, and then you always mention it. So that's an oddity of the English language for you, isn't it? Thank you. Didn't do the Gaither thing. Didn't do the Ward Records thing. So that really put me in a quandary. You know, as a spiritual human being, I was like, okay, God, what you trying to do here? I thought you were leading me in this direction. I thought you had put these connections in place, and this is what we were going to do, and all this. Well, apparently what God was doing was telling us that, okay, if the music industry is not going to accept you for whatever reason, become the music industry. So that's when Depot Music Productions was formed with Kim Ulmer and I. And maybe you know more than I do, but I don't know how many production companies were ever started by a blind guy and a cattle buyer. But that's God working in mysterious ways, is it not? We've formed Depot Music Productions, built a studio. Actually purchased, it was used to be the old train depot. That's why I got the name Depot Music Productions. But we have since moved out of that building. We'd restored that building and all this kind of stuff. And now it is a coffee shop / soup and sandwich bar, which is still owned by Kim. But anyway, then the old medical clinic came up for sale, and that's where we are now, and that's where the studio is now, and that's where the apartment is now, where Reed and I live, upstairs. And so it's kind of hard to say, well, I can't get to work this morning because it's the weather's too bad and I'll get lost. Well, I just go downstairs. That's all I do. Isn't it wonderful? So here we go, starting a recording company in Mobridge, South Dakota, which is not another plus, because you just don't hear of a lot of things musically happening in the world from Mobridge, South Dakota, do you now? No, you don't. So here we are, and in 2003 I produced the Fission CD, produced it myself, used local musicians, drummer and a bass player that I knew from a band, another band that I was in while I was in college, a country band called County Line, and a fiddle player that was going to college with my brother at Minot State University in North Dakota, and used just a lot of local talent and produced the Fission album in 2003. And that's where the Nashville Nights song came from that we opened this cast with. And I just ended a sentence with a preposition, which is something up with which I will not put. So we have Depot Music Productions now, and I work in the studio as a session musician and producer. A lot of the music that I produce for people is done over the internet. They'll send me a song that they have written, and I will kind of create a mock arrangement for them first and suggest changes. Okay, these lyrics are not good. You're not really planting your hook in the chorus as well as you should, or your bridge is kind of lacking here, and this and that. And then we'll do the mock arrangement. I'll send that back to them as an MP3. They tell me what they think about it, and they'll then, you know, give me permission to start working on the track, and I'll work on the track, and I'll send them various MP3s at various stages along in the process of it so that they can hear what I'm doing to it and suggest changes or revisions if they know anything about music, that is. And which, you know, sometimes they've written really great songs and they're really great singers, but they don't know the first thing about production. Or sometimes they think they know a lot about production and they really don't, and all they do is mess things up. And sometimes they're not very good at either singing, songwriting, or producing, and sometimes they're good at all of it. So it really runs the gamut, and it's kind of fun for me and kind of nerve-wracking for me and stressful and exciting and everything all at once, because you never know who you're going to be dealing with, how they're going to be to deal with, and I enjoy it. I would like to do a little bit more touring than I do currently, but I'm doing what I love. I'm making a living, earning a living, doing music and music production. And sometimes the artists will come here and stay for an extended stay, and we'll do the album for them here in Mobridge with them being here. And so it's not always done over the internet. And, you know, if it is done over the internet, then they'll just go to a studio near to where they are and record the vocals and then send them to me as WAV files to our FTP server. And then I import them back into our project. And I like it if they can be here, because then we can think a little more cohesively, and I can give them pointers and suggestions and vocal ideas and this kind of stuff. But it has worked, and it has worked pretty well, actually. But anyway, so that's what I do as a day job, as it were. Apart from that, I tour with my own music. I get to go quite a few places, everywhere from California to New York to Texas. I've joined up with the Christian Country Music Association, which is based out of Nashville, and they promote Christian country music, which I'm trying to promote that as well. And it's a hard genre to promote. I don't know why, because country music is huge, and I don't know why Christian country music isn't. But I think a lot of it has to do with the rift that is in place between Southern gospel and Christian country. There's just kind of a chasm there that a lot of the Southern gospel stations aren't willing to give Christian country a try, even though it is sort of a spin-off. I mean, it's edgier Christian country, and it's more modern, at least some of the artists are trying to bridge the gap between Christian country and Southern gospel yet, which I don't necessarily adhere to myself that much. Being a part of the Christian Country Music Association, I have won the Musician of the Year Award twice, in 2004 and in 2005. And recently, I just got an opening spot on the Winter Jam Tour. Now, Winter Jam is a nationwide Christian tour that goes, you know, coast to coast, border to border, kind of. I don't know if it totally covers completely the entire U.S., but it covers a large portion of it. And I brought a band to Nashville in March of this year to try out for this. It's mostly Christian rock, Christian contemporary, praise and worship music that gets on this tour. And it was there were like 20 bands at this competition, and I was the only thing there that was even remotely country. But somehow, I got chosen to be on this Winter Jam Tour. So I'm going to be showing my kind of music to huge audiences of people who have never heard or don't have a whole lot of access to this kind of music, and my music in particular. They average, I guess, 8,000 to 12,000 people per show. And I don't know exactly how many shows I'll be doing. I think that it'll be a minimum of 10. Could be as many as 30. I haven't got the exact information yet what shows I'll be playing, but I'm looking forward to it nonetheless, because getting a chance to play for, you know, 10,000 people, rough estimate, will just be a mighty fine experience for me. I will enjoy that tremendously, I am sure. But then I do mainstream country music too, you know, secular, fun country, clean country. And you know, working in the studio, I get to do everything from modern pop to folk to bluegrass to jazz, although not nearly enough jazz in my personal estimation. But it's fun because I have such a wide taste in music. My music collection is probably one of the most eclectic you'll find anywhere. Something from every continent, pretty much, and many, many genres and styles of music and all this, which I enjoy. So I think I'll play something for you off the Fishing CD now. This is an instrumental tune. This is my rendition on Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. I'm playing every instrument on here, which consists of bass, drums, acoustic guitar, electric guitar, keyboards, and saxophone. And I had fun creating this little arrangement and doing all the instrumentation myself. As I mentioned on the rest of the CD, I'm using other local musicians, and I might kind of end this whole thing, you know, with something else from that CD or whatever. But this little instrumental is just kind of fun. It's kind of a Western swing, kind of a country meets jazz kind of sound. And so I hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's kind of going to wrap it up for me. If you'd like to learn a little bit more, you can go to roryhoffman.com, RoryHoffman.com, and hear more music clips, get more bio information, get more touring dates and things where I'm going to be. And also, if you want me to, you know, if you've got a festival or something where you think my music might go over well, or a church or a whatever venue, be sure to give me a holla. I'd love to get to different parts of the country and do my music. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this, my first ever podcast. I don't really think of them as podcasts yet, because I download them directly, because I can just tell by the subject matter that a lot of the podcasts, well, not a lot of them, but probably, it's probably about half and half, really, of the podcasts that come up on Blind Cool Tech I am interested in, and some of them I'm not interested in, and some of them I just take a quick listen to see if I'm going to be interested in them or not. And there have been some mighty hilarious ones on there too, I must add. I've got quite a lot of good information and quite a few laughs, and everything from having been on Blind Cool Tech only a little over a month now that I've been listening to podcasts from Blind Cool Tech, and I actually learned about them due to the MIDI Mag podcast, which I have been a subscriber to the MIDI Mag list for a couple years now, and Neil Ewers finally came on there on the MIDI Mag podcast, which is new. The list has been out for a long time, but the podcast is new. Anyway, he had done a thing, a cast about mic configurations and mic setups, which I guess had originally been aired on Blind Cool Tech. And so from the MIDI Mag podcast, that's how I learned about Blind Cool Tech. I'll have to do a space tour of this place, I think, sometime, because it's a 70-room clinic. We've even got some x-ray machines left here. I have not tried to see if they work, and I don't think I'm going to, but the downstairs is just a chaotic mess. I haven't even been downstairs that much, so if I try to do a space podcast, I probably won't go downstairs. Or if I do, we'll probably get lost together. Doesn't that sound fun? Because there's just rooms upon rooms upon hallways, and they'll go every which way, and I don't know. I have no need to be down there, because there's nothing that we use in this building that's down there, so I haven't learned it, really. But anyway, I think that's going to do it for me. I'll also have to give you a tour of my musical instruments collection, because I have loads and loads of stuff, and you might be interested to hear some of the things that I've got. And so I'll think about doing that in the future too. I'm not a huge technological person, other than you know, music. I know how to use Sonar and the JSonar scripts, and I know a lot about mixing boards and effects units, and I use a Roland Phantom XR rack, Roland XP80 keyboard, a Yamaha MO8 keyboard, Boss VF1, effects processors, Lexicon MPX 500 processors, effects processors, all this kind of stuff. But that would probably be more stuff for the MIDI Mag podcast, and not so much this particular podcast. So I don't know exactly how many tech podcasts I'll be putting up on Blind Cool Tech, but I hope to be putting up some Blind Cool ones at any rate. So I hope that will suffice. And from some of the stuff I've been listening to, I think it will suffice. But anyway, this is me signing off. And once again, RoryHoffman.com, or Rory at RoryHoffman.com, or the email that I'm using on the Blind Cool Tech list is rhoffman@sdplains.com, sdplains.com. And so those are ways to contact me, if you should somehow want to do so. And so with that, I will bid you all adieu, ta-ta, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye, farewell, bon voyage. That's all I can think of at the moment. Bye.
car, time to go and wash the car. When I'm through walking blue, there's a list of things to do. Dirty dishes in the sink, coffee parties on the blink. I don't belong in this kitchen, I should be fishing. At 8 a.m. every day in traffic jam. I'm overworked, underpaid, haven't ever seen a raise. Stale donuts every day, there must be a better way. My day canceled dinner again, I should be fishing. Casting out and reeling in, setting my hook again. I just can't stop from wishing on that water, I should be fishing. Fishing. Well, it's 100 in the shade, I just ran out of lemonade. Old truck's got a flat, ain't no spare in the back. Heater stuck it on, both the window cranks are gone. Now I hear the engine miss it, I should be fishing. In, setting my hook again. I just can't stop from wishing that I could be on that water. I should be fishing. Boat CD with hand remote, 200 on the back, kicker pulling up the slack, live well in the floor, comfy leather seats for four, coolers to put the bait in, I should be fishing.